C7. Number 11B.
Well,
we saw that the revelation that Mrs. Eddy had was that sense of Emmanuel, God with us, which she called the sovereign ever-presence, so that we can see what is that sovereign ever-presence, namely that God is with me, therefore there is a constant revelation flowing, because God always reveals itself, but if God is with me, one with me, therefore a constant revelation must go on within me, because that revelation goes on in the ever-presence. Now, one can see that this is only possible because before this chapter, we have the chapter on animal magnetism, where we first had to see that actually only one power is at work, that therefore only one manifestation is at work. If we wouldn't have handled animal magnetism before, we would not be under the constant influx of God's revelation of himself. Therefore, in this chapter, we are really acquainted with the fact that we are the revelation of God, the ever-present revelation of God, not so much that we receive a revelation. That would be already translating it right down to the level of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, but that we are the very fact of ever-present revelation. I think we should get into the habit and into the consciousness that we are the revelation of God. Well, if we try perhaps to put that into epitome about oneness, we could perhaps put into our box chapter 6. Perhaps the simplest way would be just to write God and his manifestation is one. God and his manifestation is one. Whereas the counterfeit of it, the sense of a dualism would be that God and man would be separate, that there is a God and a man. So, God and man separate. Actually, one can see that this is the basic belief in the world. That's why perhaps this chapter has been written as the last chapter by Mrs. Eddy, because it really brought forth then the deepest sense of the new vision she had, because fundamentally we know that in religion we believe that God has a mind, but that we have a different mind, that God is a spirit, and that man also has a spirit, but that they are different. That God is soul, and that man has a soul, but that that soul is of a different nature than the soul of man. And so is principle, and the principles which we have a very definitely a sense that God is life. We somehow imagine that God is eternally going on, and next to that we have a sense man also has a life, but that life is a different kind of life. Can you see here we touch something that says, yes, God has it and man has it, but what man has is different from that what God has. He is truth, yes, that's all right, but man also has a truth. He too knows what is true and what is wrong. God is love, yes, but we also have a kind of love and various kinds of love, but this kind of love is different than the love of God. So this chapter really It's a terrifically deep and fundamental chapter revealing something completely new, namely that the mind that is God is the same mind as the mind of men. That the mind of God is actually my mind. There's no other mind, but that is actually my mind. Which shows that the old belief that we had, that God is mind, that has been accepted, and that man has a mind of its own, must now be translated back into the sense, no, man has not a mind of his own, he has the very same mind that God also has. And so we come to a oneness of the synonymous terms. We really can see that there is only one mind, one spirit, one soul, one principle, one life, one truth, one love. This is at the point of the sixth chapter, that this is now revealed. This terrific sense of one. God and man, one. One in its whole nature and essence. So there again, we feel that different sense of oneness is brought out. You know, it's interesting. You know, one aspect or one rule that one can use in the interpretation of a text, like the textbook, is always this, that one reads a chapter, and in order to see what is the difference from a chapter to another chapter in its interpretation, one just sees, does a chapter bring forth, or does a chapter speak a lot about a certain subject which does not appear in other chapters? Is there something alone text-wise in a chapter that doesn't seem to be appearing in any other chapter? For instance, here in this chapter on science, theology, and medicine, you will feel that this is the chapter where Mrs. Eddy always speaks about the one. I mean, not so much oneness, but about the one, the big one. Let me just perhaps point out a few of these statements which, in a way, you would at once say, no, they can't appear in any other chapter. One, after a while, one gets enough spirit and scientific sense that one feels this statement must be in this chapter and not in any other chapter. For instance, she says in this chapter, just in regard to the God being one, that she says, God is infinite person, capital P. In the sense of infinite personality. There's practically no other chapter where that would really fit in. Perhaps a little bit it would fit in the platform, but there it must be much more in the Trinity of the person of God. But this is really here, you know, this Immanuel sense that God is with us, that there is only one God. And bringing out that infinite one, especially capitalized one, which she doesn't do very often. She says, God is one, capitalized. Not one of a series, but one alone and without an equal. See, here she takes it in and says, well, God is one, but not just a oneness in itself, next to other onenesses. But says, no, it's just one without an equal, without anything besides itself. Here it is that she couples up that infinite one at once with saying that God is infinite individuality, and even italicizes that term, individuality. You see again, trying to show this one is one, though he is infinitely individual, but he is infinite individuality. In this chapter, she alone says, nature and God are one. It is in this chapter where she says, in one sense, God is identical with nature. Can you see that Immanuel sense? God with us, the ever-presence. The nature of God is the nature of the universe. There is nature, and God and nature is one. Just oneness. And then, you know, that terrific statement where she says, from the infinite one, again capitalized, in Christian Science comes one principle and its infinite idea, and so on. Again, going out that there is one, and that one is an infinite principle. In other chapters she would speak about the one principle, yes, but to bring out the one with a capital O, capitalized, this is very typical for this chapter. It is in this chapter again where she says, in science, mind is one, and italicizes one. Well, she naturally speaks all through the textbook of one mind and one spirit and one principle and one life and one truth and one love. But you can see that it has not the same impact as what she wants to bring out here, that mind is one, science mind is one, comma, including noumenon and phenomena. You see, it's not just one. Here it's the oneness of Immanuel, God with us, noumenon and phenomena, one. Always bringing out there is no more a distinction, no dividing line between the nature of God and the nature of the universe. There is no more a dividing line, so to say, between the noumenon and the phenomena. It's one. And God and his thought, she says here. The only time where she speaks about in that way, God and his thought. Yeah. So, can you see when one reads a chapter, one has to listen, so to say, to the theme of a chapter and ask oneself, what specific theme is she accentuating in a chapter which she would no more accentuate in another chapter? Just as I have said, for instance, in the chapter on spiritualism, she would alone in that chapter deal with mysticism. Or, say, in the chapter on objections answered, where she has to show that there are no objections, that everything is intertwined and interlocked, there she uses those terms like consistency and coherency, and in no other chapter, because that is the subject she is driving at. Yeah. All right. Now, when we see that here we have to do with that oneness as God with me, the mind of God is the same mind as the mind of man, as my mind, it's me. And on the other side, seeing that that one is infinite individuality, therefore here she shows that this oneness of God and man, the mind of God and is the same mind as the mind of man, this could be mysticism still. The mystics will say that too, that the mind of God is the same mind as the mind of man. And therefore, can you see how she brings into that oneness at once that individuality and say, yes, but the thing is that the phenomena is individual, the noumenon is infinitely individualized as phenomena. And so you have the individuality of that one mind, not just a one, but an infinitely individualized one. See, again we come to that very, very old question, the many and the one. The one and the many must not be contradictions, must not be opposites, must not exclude themselves, that we can see the individuality is still the one, but it's not a part of the one, it's only an aspect of the one. And so when we build up here a law, you see, we could first see, in order to build it up, we would have to go out, say, from the fact of Immanuel. The mind of God is my mind. Is my mind, that would be Immanuel. But that would leave open a mystical sense. And so we must put in the individualization of it and see, well, the mind of God is my mind, and then the individualization, which I like to put in, infinitely individualized. And in order that we don't feel that they are now parts, and no more the whole, I usually add, but still remaining mind. And then I build up in consciousness an individualized sense of oneness. Of the one, so to say. Not only of oneness, of the one. You know, this is really an answer to that old philosophical question of the Greek, which now today the philosophizing physicists try to solve. And when we put it into the spiritual, we have it here. So perhaps we can state that law. It's a bit a longer one, but it... See, fundamentally the law would just read here I can't do it easily with the term God, because it just doesn't... Well, let's try to do it with God, but it sounds funny. We would see that God is my God. God is my God, that would be the Immanuel. And now so that it doesn't sound mystical, they put the individualization into it and would go on and say, God is my God, infinitely individualized, infinitely individualized. And in order that I don't feel that each individualization is then just a part of the whole, I like to put in, but still remaining God, the whole of God, but still remaining the whole of God. Yes? Now, the moment we put in the synonymous terms, they seem to bring out much more. How would it read now with mind? It would read, mind, God mind, is my mind. Just put instead of God mind, is my mind. So I have no more a mind of my own. See, that gives me at once a sense I have no more a mind of my own. I can only actually be aware with the mind of God now. So, God mind is my mind, but that mind is infinitely individualized. Infinitely individualized. Therefore, every time I mind about mind, I have another aspect of mind. It all never repeats itself. My mindedness about mind is always something else. It's never repeating something else. But still seeing at every time, still remaining the whole of mind. Still remaining the whole of mind. So that I don't lose the beginning of the sentence, that mind, God is my mind, capital M. All these are capital M's. never lowercase them. And in this way, naturally, we can go to spirit and evolve it through spirit. Again, this is something that each one can do for himself and contemplate. Can you see that this week's work has a lot to do just first to clear our thought only to the point, what is the aspect of oneness, and try to put it into a law, but the substance of it, so to say, is relegated to the quiet evenings, to the quiet contemplation of each one. It's no more something that should be taught or can be taught, or that should be presented in lots of words. The principle is given, the strict law is given, the application and elaboration is left to each one. But it's wonderful when you go through this. For instance, can you see if you come to life, so that I don't go through anyone, everyone, if you see that, for instance, God, life, is my life, life capitalized. You see, so that you don't have a sense, yes, God is my life, with a small L, yes, I'm part of it. The moment you have a small L, you indicate that it is no more the whole of God. But if you capitalize, then you feel, all right, well, that life which is God is exactly the same life that is my life. I have no other life but that life which is God. You will no more ask about birth and death at that point. Because you can see that that life which is God does not know anything about birth and nothing about death, and has never been born into matter, never needs to die out of matter. Just a completely different level. So that I see, yes, God, life is my life, infinitely individualized. I experience that one life in a different way than anybody else. And though I experience it in an individual way, it's still not a part of that life. It's still remaining the whole life. The whole life. Can you feel how it will broaden out your consciousness? You know, when today all the world, the Western world, is asking for an expansion of consciousness and consciousness extension and I don't know what, and try all the tricks to expand consciousness. Well, we do the same. We too are very hot at this question, say, let's expand consciousness. Let's expand consciousness to infinitude, that it reaches infinity. And we do it through consciousness, and not through drugs, and not through emotion, and not through rituals, and not through I don't know what. We do it through awareness, conscious consciousness. Not even through unconscious consciousness, through subconsciousness, or diving down into the unconscious, or anything like that. We lift it much more up into the conscious consciousness, and lift it into the supra-consciousness of the divine mind. So in this way we really can expand the whole our consciousness. Now, if you have this present in your mind, then you can see this is on the level of divine science, and therefore the moment we would consider how it translates itself to the level of absolute Christian science and Christian science, you get those wonderful explanations in the structure book, therefore on the textbook matrix, where we have seen what in this chapter, where we have seen how this reveals itself and translates itself to the point where it retranslates mortal mind back into the divine mind, where it retranslates matter back into spirit. Can you see what it does? We went out and said, the belief is that God is mind and that man has a mind of its own. That's the belief. That's the duality. how to solve it. We start out with the oneness in divine science. See, mind is mind, God is my mind, capitalized. Translated, what does it do? It comes to me as individualized mind, still remaining mind, but it's individualized. What does it do? It translates the belief that I have a mind of my own back into the consciousness that there is only one mind. And so, taking the text of this chapter in a consecutive way as a story, like in the textbook matrix, there we find all this translation going on. That the one mind translates mortal mind back into the one mind. That the one spirit translates matter back into the one spirit. That the one soul translates sense testimony back into the one soul. These are the subjects you have in the structure book. That the one principle translates principles of natural science back into the one principle of spiritual science. Then it shows how life, the one life, translates a mortal sense of life, a theological sense of life, a routine sense of life, a dogmatic sense of life, a scholastic sense of life, right back into the one living life. And then shows in the chapter on medicine how the one truth translates that one truth to the point where it is seen that it is the only truth and therefore translates the belief that there is a truth in a remedy, in the material remedy, right back to the one truth. Can you see how in this way you can combine those two matrices into one, and they give one story, one dimensional story then. The oneness matrix is showing the horizontal of divine science, and the moment we combine it and see its impact on the textbook matrix, that then we see here the textbook matrix yields its story. Yes? Are you quite sure? Well, if you know the textbook chapters and the subject in the textbook chapter, it's just one wonderful symphony.